Welcome to the Dildork Storky Discourse on sex dating and masturbating. Does it sound like I'm saying sex dating when I say that? Like, as in dating for sex? I just thought about this.
What?
Because it is supposed to be sex, comma, dating. That is how we wrote the tagline.
I think the comma is implicit.
I think I've sort of stopped doing the comma, actually. I think I should start doing the comma again. Oh, wow. Anyway, I'm Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and apparently very concerned about grammar today. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and real bad at grammar, but it's fine.
It's fine, as evidenced by the fact that you did just say real bad, but you know what? It's lovable.
Exactly.
You're a ragamuffin.
I lean into it. It's fine.
I just said that you're a gender rebel, and what I meant to say was, of course, you're a grammar rebel, but my
that
brain
too.
Just couldn't not say gender there.
Did I tell you? So I was at Woodhull, and I was sitting at like this table full of people that I was like just meeting or whatever. And it was like right before dinner, so I had just smoked and come in and was with a couple of people. And one of the new people looked at one of the other new folks and said, "Oh my god, I loved your presentation." And what they meant was the, like, panel, the presentation that they had given earlier in that day. Mm-hmm. But what my brain heard was just that it was a blanket compliment on their gender. And it is the nicest compliment I have ever heard. Ooh. And I just... We, like, started talking about it, and we're like, yeah, we're all just taking that moving forward as an ongoing... Because there are some times where I'm like, I like your shirt, hair, shoes, everything.
I'm just loving the whole vibe. Yeah, the whole thing's working for me.
I just love everything that your gender is today, I guess.
Okay, so speaking of not gender, this episode is a continuation. I'm just going to do all segues like that from now on, because it's perfect. It like just
can I do
brain.
That every time all someone wants to talk to me about is my gender.
Right, it tricks your brain just enough that you are like, well, that sounds like a segue, but it's like not. Anyway, this episode is a continuation of last week's episode, which was about breakups, but we just got so many questions that were all really juicy and good that I knew we would have feelings and thoughts and words about, so we've split it into two parts. I'm going to start with a very contentious, very controversial question for you, Bex. Is it a good idea after a breakup to pursue a, quote, rebound? Is that even still a concept in 2019? I feel like I hear it in, like, 90s teen movies, you know?
Yeah, but I think it is still, like, the idea of immediately diving into a relationship or diving into dating to, like, lick your wounds, you know what I mean?
Right, or even a hookup. Sense. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. To kind of as a form of self-care.
Right. Or not even, like, sometimes it's not self-care, sometimes it's something less healthy, it's more like an avoidant behavior, a distraction behavior, which
absolutely.
Arguably is maybe self-care, but is also maybe unhealthy because maybe you're not addressing the feelings.
Yeah, I wasn't arguing that it was healthy self-care.
Okay.
It is just advice given under the guise of self-care.
Right.
As the thing that will make you feel better.
Mm-hmm. I just usually think of self-care as a term for something very sort of like righteous and virtuous and wholesome, and I don't really think of rebounds that way.
Yeah. I think of it, okay. Yeah, I was thinking of it more as like... I don't know, the way it's used a lot as just a blanket term for things that are good for you.
Okay, well, just an excuse to do shitty stuff.
Exactly, which is the way that rebounds often get, like, touted for people who do think it's a good idea, right?
Yeah.
That it is, you're doing this for you because you deserve it, take care of yourself, it's going to make you feel better and forget all about him.
Mm-hmm.
And... I think distraction can be a decent coping strategy for things.
Yeah.
And I think using a person as a distraction is fucking rude.
Yeah.
So I think this can work in a situation where you're going out and fucking a friend who knows what you've been through, and you're looking for, like, really cathartic kink or sex, and that person is super on board to do that with you, and, you know, they're supporting you with this, and you have that kind of relationship, and you know that you can trust that to be okay.
Right.
Sure. But just jumping to a bar to, like, find someone new, when you know you're too emotionally raw to be doing that, you're wasting their time. It's a disservice to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, wouldn't you rather approach every attempt at a relationship where you can make something positive out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I turn to a lot of distraction tactics when recovering from a breakup, as we talked about last week. But the thing about, you know, binge-watching Netflix for 6 hours is that Netflix doesn't have a consciousness, and it doesn't know that I'm literally using it to soothe my own feelings.
Yeah.
So, like, humans, you really shouldn't do that unless they're, like, expressly consenting for that. And a problem with this, too, is, like, even if you do straight up say to a person, I just got out of a heavy relationship, like, I'm kind of emotionally messed up right now, not looking for anything serious, whatever you qualify it with, sometimes people really don't hear or understand that, and they're like, yeah, but, like, you know, we'll hit it off, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
And
I'll make you feel better, I'll fix it.
Right, and that's really not, I think, the function of this when it works the way it's supposed to. I don't know.
Well, and then the problem is sometimes it'll feel like they fixed it.
Yeah.
Sometimes that you will fall for them. Sometimes NRE will happen, and everything will be all shiny and magical and great again. And you've built, and you'll just leave the residue of whatever relationship just ended kind of lingering in the air behind.
Or you can have a thing that happens that's like transference of emotion, where
yeah,
something in your brain causes you to attach to the new person in an unnaturally intimate way because you're still kind of thinking about the last person you were that close to.
Yeah, it'll kind of hang, like, even if it doesn't hang like a shadow over that relationship, you're going to have a lot of unresolved feelings that are going to come up.
Right.
In ways that are going to leave you unprepared for this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not see it in yourself at the time. Like, you may not recognize that that's happening. But I think it's unfair to both of you. I don't know, I go back and forth on the ethics of, like, picking someone up on Tinder and being like, you know, just a one-night stand or something, this is what's going on. Because still, that's a lot of feelings to put on another person to, like, support.
Well, I don't think that being a rebound hookup, like, I don't think rebound hookups necessarily have to involve a lot of, like, emotional sharing about what you went through. And, like, when
True.
I have done them, sometimes the point has been to, like, not talk about or think about that stuff for an evening.
Yeah.
I think that the only time actually that I've really, really done a rebound was, like, 6 days after one of my most painful breakups ever. I hopped on OkCupid, actually, which is kind of a weird spot for that. And there was this, like, Irish guy messaging me, and we went out, and it was, like, really bad date, really bad sex, and I actually felt kind of cleansed afterward. I was like, wow, like, dating and sex are actually not that great, necessarily, so I might actually be okay, which I know is, like, not usually how that works, but that was how it worked for me.
Well, it's good that you were able to find some value out of that.
Yeah, and then that guy texted me again, like, 6 months later after complete radio silence. I had assumed that the silence meant he agreed with me that the sex was bad and the date was bad. Apparently he wanted to fuck me again. I don't know why people do this.
It's always weird. I've had a couple of people show up, like, literal months/year later. Been like, where have you... Like, are you... Why are you still thinking about... How do you still... Okay.
Just, like, the ghosts of hookups past. It's so weird.
Yeah, like, what made me pop into your mind again? Like, don't...
I always envision it as, like, they were just sort of idly fantasizing and started thinking about my tits or my ass or something. And that's probably, honestly, not how it happens. They were probably scrolling through their phone.
Yeah.
Anyway... That's not the point of this episode. I have another question for you. This one is also very contentious and very controversial with regards to breakups. Is it possible / is it wise to stay friends with an ex after you break up?
I think it's definitely possible. I think if it's wise depends very deeply on the ex, and the situations. I find for me it's easier to like have at least a little bit of buffer time between relationship and friendship, because otherwise that area gets a little gray, and to have some conversations about like what friendship means and looks like. Yeah, but I think it's definitely doable for certain relationships. I have exes that I'm still friends with.
Yeah, I have, I think, probably two exes who I'm on good terms with. I wouldn't describe us as friends, really. But yeah, I definitely need that buffer time, because I think if I don't have that, then like even if I agree I want to be friends with them, there will be some point within that adjustment period when I send a text I'll regret, or just like am flirty in a way that's like a little bit inappropriate, just because it's like it's hard to recalibrate your view of a person that quickly, especially like if you've been with them for a long time. And so like I really feel like I need like a clean break, and maybe like somewhere between 3 months and a year before I'm able to like really return to it and like reconnect on a friend level. Anything less than that is too muddy for me.
Yeah. And I think that depends on the person and the length that you were with them, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to see, too, in the poly community. Maybe it's because there's a lot of queers in poly, and queers do this, too. But there does seem to be a lot of, like, higher rates of friendship with exes, I think. Yeah. Because poly breakups, I mean, definitely can be very, very painful. But I think that because the stakes are in some ways lower, in my experience, those breakups have been less explosive, because usually I had like some other people I could see or rely on at those times. Although I'm sure people are having poly explosive breakups all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing with poly is the more people you add, the more drama you can add. but you also have more support. And generally, hopefully, people in polyamory are people who have spent a little more time learning something about communication. And are a little bit better equipped to deal with conflict. But I do think there is a higher prevalence of friendship among exes or with exes in the queer and poly communities. And I think it is for all of those reasons, but more so I think it's because we're such an incestuous community. There were so few of us, and we are all fucking each other.
Yeah.
Like, polyamorous queers, I might break up with you, but you're probably still dating my friend.
Or I'm going to see you at an event in a week, or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, there are only so many play parties, there are only so many corners of the internet. Like, someone's going to retweet you next week into my timeline again. Like, this is how queer relationships just kind of are. So I think we've developed the skills to remain at least somewhat chill with each other.
Yes. Do you want to hear a very emblematic gay story of mine?
Obviously.
I was at Pride. Naturally. I was probably about 18, and my first sexual relationship had broken up about a year before with this girl, and I was standing around at Pride with a bunch of friends, and one of my closest friends beside me was like, "Hey, that's your ex over there. She's coming over here." And I started to panic because we hadn't talked and things were awkward, and I didn't want to talk to her. And my friend, my blessed friend, goes, "Do you want to get out of here?" And I was like, "Yes." And we literally ran away.
Oh my god, amazing.
I just really didn't want to fucking talk to her, man. I don't know. I think you I have too much social anxiety to stay friends with exes. I just, like, worry too much about what they think of me and, like, how I come across to them. And it's just, it's too much for me.
Yeah. You know, I think you should, you can sometimes opt out of those conversations if you need to. Like, I don't think they are emotionally intense conversations.
It's true. But it's almost in a way more awkward when they're not, because small talk is like incredibly punishingly awkward sometimes, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, I meant small talk can be really emotionally intense, just internally to you.
Right.
Yeah. Just like being in the presence of someone and being hyper aware of like how to act.
Right.
Because everything felt real comfy. And now you know something is different, but we're not given rules for what is different.
Right.
So how do you act to convey that, like, we're both on the same page, something is different, right? Like...
Yeah. I was in a wedding party with my first ex 10 years after we broke up. I'm sorry for all the extremely gay drama stories I'm telling. But so like there was this like pre-wedding event that we went to, and I had like maybe one too many glasses of open bar wine, and my ex from 10 years ago was telling me some story about like this guy that she was sleeping with. And she mentioned something about like performing oral sex, and I was like, well, I seem to remember that you like that a lot. And I was immediately like, why did I say that? Fuck. It was so awkward. We both just like didn't say anything. We just steered the conversation somewhere else. So it's not good at this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm that person that says those things too. So it's fine.
Now we're getting into the listener questions, which are always when things get quite specific and quite weird because our listeners are great. So this is an interesting one. Somebody wanted to know, what was your best breakup? And I think that the interesting thing here is like, why was it so good? And like, the good is a relative term here, obviously, because breakups suck, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting is the easiest answer, like, the, like, clear and definitive answer to that question is the hardest breakup I've been through.
So, in what sense was it the best, though? Was it the smoothest? Like, how are you defining that there?
It was the smoothest, and it was the one I felt the most prepared for emotionally. Mm-hmm. I was self-aware of like what was happening, and for the most part why I was feeling the ways I was feeling, why I chose to break up with them, what like it was all really intense, but like I did the thing, which I think it was maybe the second, I think last week I told the story about, like, giving someone a note to break up with them. And this time, like, I sat down and I had a conversation like a fucking grown-ass adult and did the thing.
Yeah.
So I had this degree of comfort in that the situation sucked. I felt like shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I could handle it, and I knew I could handle it, and it was one of the first times, like... It's satisfying to know that.
Right. And that was, if I'm correct, a breakup where you had pre-negotiated it, which is something else that someone asked about, was like the idea of pre-negotiating a breakup, which is just such a like queer poly kinkster thing to ask about. I don't think the average monogamous vanilla person, it would even occur to them to pre-negotiate a breakup. But like, why would one do that? And how did you do that?
It was just something that, like, I think it came up more easily because it was a long-distance relationship. So it, like, it's that or, you know, this forever, or we break up one day, or we move to the same place. So, like, there is something looming there. That, like, eventually a decision will probably need to be made, or it's this forever and this sucks, let's be honest.
Yeah, fuck LDRs, fuck them.
Yeah. They work great for some people in some situations, but I think they're pretty much hard across the board.
Yeah. I mean, they work great for me, they still fucking suck. It's like,
exactly, you know. Exactly. I think that just, and we're both relationship nerds, so I think it just made it easier to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm. So the conversation, I guess I should clarify what I mean by pre-negotiate. This is like a conversation before you ever intend to break up or are even thinking about it, really, where you're like, if we did break up or when we do break up, what is going to happen? What are our expectations and hopes around that? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it was, I don't know that it was a conversation, like, I don't remember it being one big conversation that we sat down and had and negotiated. It was just in conversations about the kinds of relationships we liked to create and like to have, mm-hmm. we didn't shy away from conversations of breakups too. Mm-hmm. What worked for us, you know, what's worked for us in the past, what we thought would be good moving forward. And we kind of built it into our negotiations of our relationship in general. Mm-hmm. That's not to say I don't think that you can have a sit down and just like conversation at some point. Mm-hmm. Don't necessarily take it as fact, like when you break up later, be like, well, 6 months ago, mm-hmm. you said you'd want to be my friend.
Right.
Like, and it's like a kink lord scene. That over them.
Like, it's like a kink scene where like things evolve over time, and like saying that you consent to something once doesn't mean you consent to it forever.
Exactly. But just having that in the air and knowing mm-hmm. those preferences about your partner and like their thoughts on that philosophically mm-hmm. is a really easy way to approach it, and makes those conversations easier to have when you're like, all right, so this is what's happening.
Right.
It's not the first time you've ever talked about that.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that woman who's a mortician. I think her name is Caitlin Doty or something, from Ask a Mortician. Mm-hmm. And she talks about like how weird it is that we, as much as like our entire culture and like humanity at large is like afraid of death and uncomfortable with death, like we really don't talk about death that much, like especially in terms of like what's going to happen after you die, like what do you want to happen, all that stuff. And it reminds me of relationships, because like there is something very like taboo almost about discussing a potential breakup with someone you're dating. Yeah. Because people assume, like, reasonably so, that if you're bringing that up, that you might be considering it. But I think it's, like, really valuable to have that conversation at a time when it's not an immediate concern. Like, I honestly haven't been able to do it, really, because every time I almost have that conversation, I get so sad about it. Like, I remember me and my partner were having a conversation once about, like, what would we do with my collar if we broke up? And we thought about it for like 2 seconds, and we were both like, this is too sad. We should talk about something else. And that's about as far as I've ever gotten in that conversation. But like, I really admire the like, honestly, emotional bravery of people who are able to do that. And I think it probably is helpful.
Everything that I do only lasts for, you know, as long as it lasts. And then it ends. Everything ends. And pretending mm-hmm. it doesn't is odd to me. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, it might be sad, but good relationships rarely end. Like good, solid, comfortable relationships that everyone is happy about rarely end.
Right.
So like, if you've gotten to the breakup point, that's where it needed to be, and you go from there.
Right. Yeah. Gosh. All right. Yeah, I don't have much to add to that because I really haven't done it because I'm a fucking coward. But kudos to you, my friend. Someone wanted us to talk about friend breakups and in particular, like how they can be just as painful, if not more so, than romantic breakups. And we actually for a very long time have wanted to do an episode specifically about friendship. And I think that we keep avoiding it because we know that we're like, I'm going to cry and you're going to be like, I'm having feelings. This is weird. And it's just going to be like a whole thing.
Yep. That sounds right.
Yeah. But I mean, do you have any words of wisdom on friend breakups? Because they do fucking suck.
They really fucking suck. And honestly, I think one of the reasons that they are so much harder is because our society values friendships as less than romantic relationships and connections, mm-hmm. so you're not supposed to care as much, and there's scare quotes around most every word in that sentence. But, yeah, there's this feeling of, like, oh, yeah, that's a bummer, but it's not a breakup. It's a friend breakup. Like, oh, they were right. just your friend, right?
But you can absolutely grieve it in the same way.
Yeah, to the same those degree, connections even. Can be just as intense and just as intimate.
Yeah.
And it can feel like as just as much of a betrayal.
Oh, totally. I've had two different very, very long-standing friendships end with the other person completely ghosting me.
Yeah.
Which, when I think about it in terms of comparing it to romantic relationships, if I had been in a relationship with someone for 10 years, as was the case with both of these friends, and they just ghosted me, we would all agree as a society that that's unthinkable and rude and
yeah.
horrible and
hurtful.
But
you just grew apart.
Right,
your
exactly.
connection just faded.
Exactly, and it's like, even the label of best friend, like, can fade out more easily. I mean, these people were people I considered my best friends at the time. And that yeah. even doesn't have the same status as boyfriend, girlfriend, etc. In the sense that, like, if you want to end the friendship, you don't necessarily have to formally end it, which is in some ways a blessing, and in other ways, like, truly awful. Like, truly hellish, because for a good 6 to 12 months after those people started to ghost me, I was still like, what is happening? Like, are they really just busy all the time? Like, do yeah. they want to end this friendship? It's unclear. And that is so much worse to me than someone just breaking up with you in one go.
I think it speaks to a larger problem in how we view friendships in general and how we approach them as people. So not only do we see them as somewhat like a lesser tier than a romantic relationship and not talk about these breakups, but we don't negotiate the friendship the rest of the way through the friendship either. Like, you very rarely ask someone to be your friend. I actually remember the first time someone did that, I was friends with someone, and we were, like, 7 or 8, and she was like, I want to ask the new neighbor to be my friend. And I was like, you don't just ask them. That's just weird. You just become their friend. Like, what? But it's true, like, friendship is supposed to be something a little more, like, ephemeral, and I definitely have supposed to be, again, scare quotes, and I definitely have friendships that feel that way, people that, like, delight me when they're in my life, and then mm-hmm. when they're not around, I don't see them super often, you know? Mm-hmm. But I have other people with whom I have a connection and a commitment that feels similar to the way I commit myself to my relationships. You know, they need me. I show the fuck up. I take, you know, I take care of them. I do things for them. And yeah, it's just, but it's just a friendship.
Right. Yeah. And the thing that's hard about that too is, like, it may well inspire emotions as strong as a breakup might when a friendship ends, including, like, what we were referring to last week as literal grief. But when you try to tell people about it, they just don't understand it in the same way, unless maybe they've been through a similar thing, where it's like, you know, I've told a number of people, my best friend of 10 years ghosted me with no explanation whatsoever, and I'm still sad about it. I feel like people don't really see that as severe, as if I was like, my boyfriend of 10 years ghosted me and I still don't know what happened. Like, I think people would be so much more outraged in that case, and it's partly because that would be a man, but you know, like, people really don't understand it in the same way, and so, like, you almost can't get the same amount of, like, emotional support around it that you might very well need.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is a symptom of monogamy culture, right? Because your partner is your one. They're your only one. You have so many friends. You have so much more support. Just, you have other friends. Which is, honestly, how some monogamous folks approach poly breakups. You have other partners, don't you? Like, yes, let me just fill in the other. They'll just pick up the extra shifts in my calendar. It's fine. Like, we have a phone tree to get dates covered. Don't worry about it. I don't really care which one shows up.
Right, well, like, the core of what we're saying here is that the loss of a person who is important to you is always going to be painful in a way that's very specific to them, regardless of whether you're romantically involved with them or not. And it's something that as a culture, like, we, our recognition of that is very uneven and very, like, biased towards romantic relationships. And it, it really leaves people out in the cold. Like, I really wonder how many people have gone through intensely painful friendship breakups that they really felt like they had no support around and, like, didn't even feel necessarily like they had the right to complain about it.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Not only is this stigma from the outside, but a lot of us may not even recognize that pain right away, or mm-hmm. may not even, like, feel valid in feeling that way.
Right. Like, even in monogamy culture, if someone breaks up with you, it's like, even if you're mad, you can kind of be like, well, I understand, like, this, your romantic relationship is like, you only get one, so it has to be right. But with a friendship, it's like, you can have however many you want.
Yeah.
And within reason. And so there is this sense of, like, if they ended it, they must have really fucking wanted to end it. Like, what's wrong with me, you know? And yeah. There's just so much going on there. Just so many complicated feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next question. Breakups are so hard. The next question was about poly breakups, which is a good segue, actually, because we were just talking about that. Someone was wondering, how are poly breakups different? And their phrasing of this question led me to believe that they're probably monogamous. But they are different a little bit in some dimensions.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I mean, I think we've touched on a lot of these. But the stigma is definitely different.
Mm-hmm.
The way society responds to you during it. Your support is different.
Mm-hmm.
There can be some of that internalized stigma. Right. There can be a weird shame in complaining about one breakup to other partners.
Right, because it's like you're complaining about, like, losing a little money, but you're still rich. Like,
yeah, exactly. Or like, why are you spending your time with me? Because we all have limited time, right? And you have, why are you spending this date talking about someone else? Or like, bringing the burdens of one relationship into another and making that person, like, support me through it. Sometimes that can be hard, even though these people are, like, my closest support network.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I've heard of poly breakups being described as having, like, a ripple effect where,
yeah,
or even just tension in a relationship can spread outward because if the people in a relationship are stressed or sad, or angry, whatever, they might very well bring that into their other relationships, whether or not they mean to. And so there is a lot more kind of like interconnectivity and people being attuned to each other. And so, like, a breakup does probably cast a wider net than it does in a monogamous situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that, in both good and bad ways, because it casts a wider net in terms of, like, negative influence, stressing people out, etc., making people sad. But it also casts a wider net in terms of, like, what you were saying too, like, social supports, because it's great to have friends around when you've been through a breakup, but having romantic partners around when you've just been through a breakup, it's only happened to me a couple times, I think, but it is so unique.
Yeah.
Like, especially because, like, I feel like it's kind of like a happy medium, that it's sort of like a rebound, but not with the shitty parts of a rebound because, like, you actually know this person and you're actually involved with them and intimate with them. But at the same time, you can get a little something from an encounter with them that you might be craving as a result of a breakup, like a little hit of validation or feeling like you're hot or feeling like you're desirable or like you are not terrible at relationships. So that is comforting. That is nice.
Yeah, I feel like a big fear that comes up when, particularly for monogamous folks around breakups, is, like, if they're not my one, who is?
Right.
Like, oh, I'm going to be alone forever now.
Mm-hmm.
And polyamory can very much mitigate that,
mm-hmm.
That particular fear. It creates a ton of new ones, but, you know, gets one out of the way, too. Something.
Yeah. One of my only experiences with this, I had a very, very angry, scary breakup over the phone, which I think I talked about last week extensively, with one partner. And I happened to have two other partners at the time. And I reached out to one of them and I was like, can you please just, like, take me out to my favorite restaurant tonight? I want to eat mac and cheese and just, like, be sad and eat carbs. And yeah. we did exactly that and also had sex, which was also helpful. And it was just so... That had never happened to me before because I hadn't been poly for that long. And it was really pretty notably different from when I text a friend immediately after a breakup and I'm like, can I come over and like cry on your couch and watch Friends with you? Like, the romantic relationships offer you that stuff, but also something a little bit different, which is nice.
Yeah.
Related, someone was wondering if you have any tips on, or if we have any tips on how to support partners who might be going through a breakup.
I mean, we've spent two episodes talking about how grief is really unique to the person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the best thing you can do is talk to them about how you can be a support. But I find in really emotionally intense and overwhelming situations, multiple choice questions to make things much easier. Short answer. So not sitting down and saying, what do you need? Sitting down and saying, would company feel good right now? Or do you want to be left alone? Do you want me to talk to you? Or do you want to just sit and watch something together? Right. Can I get you a snack or something to drink?
Can I bring you food or would you like me to send you food?
Yeah.
Options. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that's good advice for anybody who's grieving anything, honestly.
Yeah. Any intense feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Executive functioning is one of the first things to go out the window, especially with folks who struggle with depression and mental illness and that sort of thing.
Right. And I also find that when depression and or grief have deadened my emotional sensitivity or however you would refer to that, I don't have enough of a sense internally of what I actually want and what would actually feel good. Like, people might list options and I will just sort of feel dead inside, like unable to distinguish which one actually feels the best to me. But I do find it easier to like reach for a multiple choice list rather than someone just asking me open-endedly, what can I do to help you? Because I really don't know at that point.
Yeah, I will not be able to come up with ideas. But if you list things, sometimes one of them will have like an extra glimmer of response in me.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a sheen of something of like, I could eat that.
Right.
You know, like,
exactly.
Oh, that option doesn't feel awful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, I honestly, it's, I could picture myself doing that in the next few minutes.
Right.
I could see that.
I also think, like, for me, and this is definitely, as you said, a unique thing because everybody deals with grief differently, but I also really appreciate when I'm grieving something, having people treat me relatively normally. Rather than treating me very gingerly as like, this person has been through something sad and therefore I will only talk to them about their feelings and I will make a lot of sad faces around them and look concerned. It's like, sometimes you really just need somebody to be fucking normal to you and like,
yes,
you know, take you shopping or go out for lunch or hang around watching a show or whatever and just act like everything's fine. And then it kind of starts to feel a little bit better in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really important for me, is just being able to not think about it for a little while. And we talked about this last week, but being able to find that balance.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, like, I recognize that I probably look like shit. Like, I probably still look miserable. But I can't see me. I can see you.
Right.
And if you're looking miserable at me, I can't forget.
Mm. Yeah. One of the most memorable things, that like any of my memories about breakups in general, is after my most painful breakup, I on purpose scheduled to see friends every night for a week. And because I knew that being alone would not be healthy for me. And so, like, one night I went to an improv show with a couple of friends. One night I went to hang out with another friend. One night I was, like, I think on Skype with you watching a show or something. I just made sure I wasn't alone every single week. And I planned it so that it was, like, particular, like, activities because I really didn't want to be staring at a friend who was just, like, looking at me concerned and, like, sad and, like, you must be sad. Want to talk about how sad you are? Which is, like, definitely valuable sometimes, but I just, like, didn't want that. I wanted to, like, go out to an improv show and laugh with my pals, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes I want to be able to talk about it without being sad.
Mm-hmm. Like make jokes about it and stuff.
There is value in making jokes about it or just, like, talking about it. And yep. just, like, yeah, being okay with it.
This next one is a big one that I know we have feelings about. Literally, we could probably do a whole episode on this, but my friend, how are DS breakups different from regular breakups?
Oh my god. Oh
I literally god. Just want to you sit down and cry for maybe? An hour thinking about this question.
Yeah, you suggested that maybe you would ask this question and it would turn breakups into a three-parter. I think it just turned breakups into a four-parter.
Can we do a whole episode about DS breakups? No, but...
no, but...
we might very well spend the rest of this episode talking about DS breakups, though.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we will, yeah. They're really fucking intense.
They really fucking suck.
For me, it felt like two different relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I stopped doing DS stuff with the partner who I had, like, the most intense DS relationship with before we broke up by a couple weeks, I think.
Wait, sorry. I just realized that I should say, in case anybody doesn't know this, when we say DS, we mean dominance and submission. I am trying to get better yes. about defining terms because we've gotten a bunch of emails recently from people being like, I learned so much new shit from your podcast. And I'm like, oh, so we should, like, teach things and explain things sometimes.
Yes. No, that super makes sense.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, relationships you. With some sort of power dynamic.
Right.
Explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, for me, we stopped doing kink things, and that in and of itself felt like a breakup, and it was because I didn't feel, like, super safe and comfy, and that was more vulnerable for me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let's stop doing that, and maybe come back to it at some point, and we did not really. But yeah, it... That, it's... felt like a breakup for me. Because it was this intensely vulnerable connection that we had.
Yeah.
And it was part of what made me realize I had to just end the relationship was that I didn't feel comfy with that anymore.
Yeah, I think
a
lot of
comfy in that place.
A lot of vanilla people, I think of DS as essentially role play, like a fun yeah. thing you do from time to time, which certainly for a lot of people is what it is. But when you are in a 24/7 or close to that DS dynamic, at a certain point, it starts to feel not like a role. Like, it starts to feel, I mean, I don't want to speak for other kinksters, but for me at least, it definitely starts to feel like integral to who you are and what the relationship is about. And I do yeah. think, like you said, like, it does feel like two separate breakups because you operate in different modes with this person at different times, depending on what's going on. And some of the modes might be partners, and some of them might be more, like, dominant and submissive. And those do kind of, in some ways, feel like two separate relationships. So it is like a double whammy when you end it.
Well, and I think the reason they feel so distinct is because I access two different parts of myself and my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm two different people in those scenarios. So not yeah. only am I losing this relationship, but it feels like I'm losing access to the person I am with them, which yes. to some degree is true for any relationship, but I think is really obvious in a kink breakup.
Right. Well, because if you're pursuing a DS dynamic, I think part of it is, of course, you're drawn to the side of the slash that you are attracted to, which may be dominant or submissive or both, whatever the case may be. But I think right. part of it is also you are drawn to the part of yourself that it brings out. Like, I am turned on by being a submissive, like, irregardless of whether there is even a dominant physically present.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when I went through my toughest DS breakup, which was a daddy-dom, little-girl dynamic, I was not only mourning the loss of that partner, but I was mourning, like, my little girl self might never see the light of day again. There isn't a safe space for her to come out anymore. Yeah. There isn't somebody who will take care of her. She, for all intents and purposes, doesn't exist now until I maybe rediscover her. And I went through the same thing that you did in terms of, like, kind of losing my DS, kind of being like, I don't know if this will ever come back to me, if I'll ever want this again, if I'll ever find this again, which is in itself its own type of terrible loss when it's something so important to you.
Yeah, and I think what's important there is that you said that there was not a place for her to really feel safe anymore. Mm. And I think that's what really stands out for me, is that this is such a deeply vulnerable and intimate place that a lot of people get into. And feeling hurt down there, feeling like you've opened up this degree of vulnerability that, and this degree of intimacy that you don't reach with everyone. Mm-hmm. Being hurt down there sucks, and it's different. And it's part of the process, and it fucking happens sometimes. Like, there are obviously ways to avoid it, but DS dynamics, most of them end until the one that doesn't, and in that one, someone dies. Like, that's... you know what I mean? Either you break up, or eventually someone dies. Either way, we're dealing with this feeling of grief and this feeling of pain, and you're losing that connection, and that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that it's, like, it's still valuable and it's super worth it, and I'm gonna do it again, and I'm gonna continue to do it. And it hurts like few other things.
It really is very unique. I wrote a piece grappling with this, which I think is called something like The Departed Dominant and the Scorned Submissive or something like that. I'll link it in the show notes. Because it was, like, having been through so many breakups, it was when my daddy dom broke, my first ever daddy dom broke up with me, it was truly unparalleled for me in terms of grief and the feeling of betrayal, even though we only dated for 3.5 months. Like, this is how deep this shit goes. And, I mean, this was further complicated by the fact that kink dynamics that have a parental sort of bent to them sometimes can feel like there should be an element of what we might term unconditional love, which, I mean, we could do a whole fucking episode about what is unconditional love and what does that mean and what are its limitations. But, you know, romantic relationships do not necessarily have to be unconditionally loving. But when someone leaves you who you thought loved you no matter what, in like a parental sense, I mean, I literally refer to that breakup as traumatic, which I often feel like I'm being overly hysterical when I call it that, or I'm overreacting. But literally, I do, like, I have similar responses that I hear from my friends who have been through trauma to what they describe. Like, when I'm in his neighborhood, like, when I have to walk through his neighborhood for something, I start getting hypervigilant and panicky and breathing fast and really, really freaked out that I'm going to run into him, even though the odds are very low and stuff like that. Because it's just, like, it was so hurtful for me. I can't even honestly express it. Is this the only time that I've, like, almost cried on this show? Probably not.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
No, but it's, like, I honestly can't even overstate how painful it was for me, which no one really prepared me for, because I think when you talk about kink, often it's, like, oh, like, it's so fun and sexy, and you don't talk about, like, how sometimes it can be the most painful thing that's ever happened to you, you know?
Yeah. Like, oof. Yeah. Because it is part of what particularly power players and particularly folks, like, well, I think you touched on two things, but I just, like, I mentioned this earlier, but it's that degree of intimacy and connection. Yeah. Like, it is what you are playing with is vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a core tenet of what you are accessing, is you're putting yourself in a deeply vulnerable place and trusting this person. And that's what makes it so powerful, and that's what makes it feel so fucking good, and that's what makes you able to access such incredible things, and that's what makes it fucking hurt so bad.
Yeah.
Because you've given them as much as you can in many places.
Yes. I'm always interested in hearing from dominants and tops about this, because I have only been through it as a submissive and a bottom. And I can sort of imagine when I try to try my best to be empathetic, what it might feel like to lose a submissive and the ways in which that might be different. But I do always appreciate hearing Dom's perspective on this because it is like a qualitatively different type of loss. Yeah. But if we can steer it back before we wrap up a little bit toward like solutions or like things that might help. I think from going through this, I know that there was a time period when I literally thought, I'm never going to do Daddy Dom Little Girl stuff again. Like, that part mm-hmm. of me has died. He took it from me, and it's his, and it's gone. Mm-hmm. I'm getting very teary. It's fine.
Or they created it in me. They exactly. brought it out. They're literally, the only person who knows how to find it.
I really felt like he stole it from me. Mm-hmm. And there was a period of time when I was really like, I guess that part of my sex life is just done. Like, I guess I'm never going to do that again because I can never trust anyone that much again. And so my advice would be to, like, be gentle with yourself about that. Like, if you do feel that way, maybe just acknowledge to yourself that it's very unlikely that it's permanent. And even if it is permanent, it's okay. There's still, like, other fun stuff you can do. I remember you saying that to me, like, because that was one of my things that I was really sad about at that time was, like, what if I never feel submissive again? Like, what if this thing that brings me so much joy and pleasure is gone for me? And you said kind of like, if that's true, you'll figure out something else to enjoy.
Yeah.
Which at the time was like, you're right. Like, yeah, I will.
We have left behind so many hobbies in our... Okay, well, again, maybe that's an that's definitely an ADHD thing. But, like, through our lives, we will pick up and put down so many hobbies, so many things that bring us joy and connection. Mm-hmm. If kink is that important to you, you will find other ways to approach it. Mm-hmm. It's likely not gone forever. It's okay that it's gone for now.
Yeah.
You don't have to, like, force yourself to be back into it.
Right. If I even mentally compare it to vanilla sex or vanilla relationships, like, yeah, there are times after certain particularly bad breakups when I was like, I can't trust anyone. I don't want to date or I don't want to have sex for a while. Like, that's kind of a natural part of breakups for many people. And it can feel like it's going to be permanent, but it's like very, very unlikely that it will be. So if you can at all counsel yourself to understand that this is probably a temporary feeling, I think that that can be very relieving.
Yeah. I think alternatively, if you are like really fixated on it and not able to be okay with that, mm-hmm. Maybe explore some weird shit that you never did with that person.
Mm.
Find some fringe kink that you haven't talked about. Find some weird fan fiction somewhere. Yes. Learn something that turns you on that you have, like, never done with that person. Because there will be, I mean, if you're anything like me, there will be some weird shit somewhere that you'll be like, well, fuck, I'll add that to my list now, I guess.
Yeah.
So, exploring, like, okay, well, what other ways can I access that feeling? Or similar feelings?
Yeah, especially, like, if this person was, like, one of your first or your first to do these particular things with, you may have this sense of, like, that thing is theirs and I can't do it with anyone else, which, if it's true, that's fine. As I said, there's more shit to do. But also, as you were just saying, you can find ways to access those feelings on your own. Like, I remember being really interested in the idea after that really painful breakup of how to be in my little girl self by myself, which I had never really thought about doing before. And I looked for ways to do that. And for me, that would often be like smoking a lot of weed and watching a cartoon or something.
Yeah.
Where it was like, I found ways to be organically delighted by things in a way that really brought me into like a little girl type of headspace. So, I hear from other submissives, like regardless of what kinds of submissive things they're into, seeking ways to find that headspace by themselves, because it's just like gratifying and empowering to be able to do that even if you haven't gone through a breakup. And I think that that's just like a nice self-care practice in general, and there's so many different ways to do that. You just kind of have to think about what those might be for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely like getting into like little space alone. It's especially because that's a particularly vulnerable space. And I like also exploring headspaces like that alone before getting into them with new partners. Because I can figuring out variables. Your shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's also important to acknowledge to yourself and others that if, like, say you were in a submissive thing with someone else, your submissive self might be different with the next person. It might not manifest exactly the same way. And that's just a function of different sexual partners bring out different sides of you, the same way you probably act different with different friends. And so you don't necessarily have to think of it as a loss if in your next sexual dynamic there's, you know, some elements from the previous one that are missing, because there's probably some elements that are new that were not available previously.
Yeah, because our dynamics are all about how our two particular brains fit together, you know?
Yeah, and that's, like, the beautiful thing about it is it's just very unique. It's like a fingerprint. Like, every DS dynamic has its own stuff. And I think that's actually a really common thing even for vanilla folks is, like, after a breakup, really fixating on, like, well, this person had these specific traits and I'll never find those again. And so, therefore, I'm doomed and I'll be sad forever. And I completely understand when you're in that headspace. It's very easy to be myopic and not be able to see the big picture. But there will be more people, I promise. And, like, I think if I had any overarching message about breakups, it's, like, things will get better and there will be more people and you will be okay. Like, even if it super doesn't feel that way right now, I promise.
Yeah.
All right, should we end on that note?
I was going to say, that's a great note to leave it on.
Yeah, so we actually had so many listener questions. You know what? This is a fucking three-parter. There's a lot to say about breakups. If you do have more breakup questions in the next week, feel free to send them to us. Our email address is thedildorks@gmail.com. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. I have a newsletter also at katesloan.substack.com. which is just, like, feelings about sex and kink and relationships. Last week's edition was about jeans and how they make me feel in my gender. And that is $5 a month or $50 for the year, and it's a fun thing. And also, I do another podcast called Question Box with my pal Brent Black. And I forget if I mentioned recently that me and my partner were both on that show recently. You should go check out that episode. We had some interesting chats. Where is your stuff, friend?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together with the Dildorks, we're on Twitter and Instagram as the Dildorks, or at BexTalkSex, I guess. and you can find us at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. Brings us up in the charts. It makes us easier for other folks to find. And if you want to support us even more, you can go to patreon.com/thedildorks to throw a couple of bucks our way and help us keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, and one of the things we're doing at our Patreon show, if you don't know, is this show called Hypotheticals. Hypotheticals. I pronounced it incorrectly. we got high and asked each other sexual hypothetical questions, and those are going up once a week ish now. They're fun. They're only about 2 to 3 minutes each, so they're easy to digest, and they're just us being intoxicated and silly. So check those out. Thank you so much to Protodome for doing our theme song. It's called I Want You in My Bedroom. Thank you to Amy for doing our logo, which is beautiful. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Should we count down first, too?
I guess, yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Thank you for helping me make content.
No problem. I want to make your job easier.
Oh, but now I've clicked on myself and I don't want to do that. I will click back. Okay. I don't want to look at myself. I sat down in front of the webcam and turned it on. I was like, dear God, how is this my face? I don't, it's just like, I'm not feeling it today. It's just one of those days.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot of those days. Today I'm actually having one of the others where I, like, actually, I feel like I'm passing more, I guess, or something. I don't know, but feeling good in my gender today.
Well, you look very charming and cute, as per usual, so.
Thanks.
It is 7:34. Do you think that we should start, despite the fact that my partner is the only one in the room with us? Can you imagine if this was a live show and it was literally just Matt in the audience?
There would be a lot more promotion if it was an in-person show, though.
It's true. It does sound like something they would do, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ash is real bummed that she's not here, but she's literally tied up at the moment. So.
I love that when the internet goes out, our instant reaction is to reach for our phones, which also operate on the internet.
Perfect.
Okay. Oh, your girl is a good podcaster. Great. Okay. I'm so sweaty. Fuck. Today, Matt was like, I want you to take a shower for me today. And they were like, you should probably do it after both podcasts because you get sweaty when you podcast. And I was like, no, I don't. I'm going to shower now. And like, I do. I really do. It's like the amount of sweat where, like, I could tuck my shirt under my boobs, and then there would just be, like, lines. Just thick lines.
I get binder sweat, which is atrocious. Because everything is so tight, but you can just feel the droplet of water, like, in that little slot between your shoulder blades on a really hot day. It's a good time. Standing in line at Six Flags, just feeling it all drip down my back. Ugh.
Binder sweat, hashtag trans problems. Yeah, I haven't experienced that one.
So excited to not have to do that anymore.
I'm excited for you. Yay! Who are you, friend? You froze again. How sad. Just when I was about to speak to you.
Is it still recording?
The screen in my computer just went black. Cool.
I think it's been recording this whole time.
So cool and great. So cool and great. Anyway, our episode this week is a part two of earlier this week. I'm so confused. We're recording this later. No, let me just take it fucking again. It didn't make any sense. This episode's
going
out next week.
We're going off the rails. Ugh.